welcome to Music Weekly from guardian.co.uk. I'm Rosie Swash, and we've got quite a show for you this week. We talked to Melissa Lilaudes from Telepathy about the band's much-acclaimed debut album. We have a listen to music from The Walkmen, The Prodigy, and The Blackout Crew in Singles Club. And Paul Lester takes on the feature with No Name to remember 70s rock god Spirit. Before we get to all that, what do you think of when you hear this? Say I'm gonna leave. Well, if that makes you think of disco divas, then think again. The voice behind that song is that of Candy Statens, the woman who puts the soul into country. Alabama-born Candy was discovered singing in a church choir as a child, her voice bringing her local acclaim, and then later to the attention of producer Rick Hall and the Muscle Shoal recording studios. Statens enjoyed a rebirth in the early 90s after The Source sampled her vocals for the dance hit You Got the Love, and a whole new generation of fans discovered her music following the re-release of the Muscle Shoals recordings in the 2000s. Well, she's back this year with a new album called Who's Hurting Now, and when I met up with her earlier this week, Statens explained to me just who she's addressing with that confrontational title.
I guess it's just a little assertiveness on my part. My background is so much hurt. It's a little bit more assertive. Now, you know, you left me. You thought it was going to be great. We have a thing in America called the 80-20. You leave the 80 for the 20. You already had the perfect lady, yet you couldn't be satisfied because you saw the 20 and she looked good. And all of a sudden you found out she wasn't what you had at home. So now you're trying to get back and it's too late.
The sound of the album, I feel, is very joyful. It feels like a really nice, happy record, and I wondered how much it was connected to your previous album, His Hands, because it feels like maybe a real progression.
I wanted more positive music. Quite honestly, I'm not that way anymore. I respect myself, and I think I'm worth it to have someone that really loves me for myself. You know, you can leave if you want. There's a door.
I thought it was quite interesting that the song that Will Oldham wrote for you on the new album also features the word hands, but it's so different from the first song. How did you come to collaborate with him? And because he wrote these songs for you, and it's quite incredible that someone else can write so personally for somebody else.
I've never met Will. I would love to meet him someday, but I had a television show in the States for over 20 years. He saw me on TV, and I was talking about some things, and he also heard me after I got divorced from my last husband. He wouldn't work, but I was talking about it on television one day, and I didn't mind talking about it. And he came up with, get your hands dirty. Go to work. You will never see me call you a friend. Will you get your hands dirty?
The first song that he wrote for you, His Hands, is a really exceptional song. Yeah, you know, it's got some quite traumatic themes in there as well. How did you feel when you first read those lyrics that he sent through to you?
I thought they were profound. How did he know how women feel when they get abused? How did he know that just the mere sound of their footsteps brings on fear? Just my ex-husband, I used to hear him open the front door and I would start shaking uncontrollably because I didn't know what he was going to do to me. I didn't know what he was going to say. Didn't know what kind of mood he would be in. And when I sung that song, it was like I relived all that stuff.
So does it upset you ever, or when you perform some of these songs and songs from your past that were recorded and written during a period of your life where you weren't very happy and you were going through these things? Or do you find it maybe cathartic to perform them now and it helps you?
It's like listening to another person's story, because it's not my story right now. And sometimes I relive the actual emotions of it when I'm singing, like I'm just a prisoner. And the times I was begging a guy and my self-esteem was so low. So I don't need that. I'm so happy alone, you know, and I'm not lonely. I'm alone, but I'm not lonely. I am lonely. Don't let me down. My future doesn't lie in living solitary. So don't feel bad for me.
It struck me a couple of interviews that I've read with you. You mentioned very specifically your place in the world of music compared to Aretha Franklin and Gladys Knight, and as if, you know, it used to kind of plague you that you weren't maybe achieving what they were. Mm-hmm. The re-release of the Muscle Shoals stuff, yeah, re-established an audience, and okay, also, you know, sort of found a younger generation. Right. Has that made you think very differently about how people see you and how you see yourself in the, in, you know, in the grand spectrum of music?
Oh, yeah. That was when I was younger. You know, I was competitive. And it seems like there were only so many spots for the charts. And naturally, when Aretha Franklin or Gladys Knight or Chaka Khan came out with a new record, if I came out with one at the same time, who do you think they were going to play? You know, they were going to play, because at that time, the big money and stuff was going behind the big artist, and you kind of got lost in the shuffle. And I did for a while. I really did feel bad. I felt neglected. I felt like I was overlooked. But as you grow older, you know you have a place, and that place, maybe that was not my place at that time. Maybe I wasn't supposed to be there at that particular time.
I read, I don't know if it's true, that You Got the Love was actually taken from a documentary or maybe your TV show, and you just sort of sang it to inspire somebody else. And that when you were approached by the source to re-record it, you couldn't remember the song. Is that true?
No, okay. Let me get it straight. Let me just get it straight. It was for a diet product. This guy was 900 pounds, and he was losing it, and they had cameras showing him losing weight. And he lost all his weight except 300 pounds. He did real good. But it wasn't enough, so they just dropped it. So I'm like, okay, it's over. I'm just going to move on. Years later, it was a top 10 over here in this country, and the DJ got on the phone and he said, is this Candy? I just wanted to congratulate you on your top 10 record over here in the UK. I said, what top 10 record? What are you talking about? He said, You Got the Love. I said, I've never made a record like that. It would have been so long I'd forgotten. And 2 days later, we were in the studio. I was in the studio, and one of the musicians had just done a tour over here with someone. And he said, Candy, you got a top 10 record. They playing that record so much. I said, how did it go? And he kind of sung it for me. Sometimes I feel like throwing my hands. I said, yes, that's the song I did in Chicago. And then it all came back to me.
I wanted to go way back to the beginning for you, because you were born in Alabama in the pre-civil rights era, and I just wondered how much of your childhood you remember being affected by what it was like to live in that time.
I have horrible, horrible memories of the Ku Klux Klan, and when I was a kid, I used to watch them come through our neighborhood with their white hats and the torches. And I remember all this. I remember the women, men, and colored toilets, you know, in the waters. I remember all that. And I never in my life thought I'd ever see a black president. You know, after you see all that other stuff and then see that a black man is occupying the White House, it's like almost a dream come true. It's a miracle.
That was the fantastic Candy Staton. Now, at the beginning of that interview, she mentioned having some songs written for her by Will Oldham. And Will Oldham, of course, also trades under the stage name Bonnie Prince Billy. He's got a new album coming out, and we've got an absolutely brilliant interview with him in which he talks about everything from R. Kelly to filming in caves. And that's going to be coming up on the show in a couple of weeks' time. But as for Candy, her album Who's Hurting Now is out on Honest John's right now. Speaking of Honest Jones, is that pun Paul McInnes enough for you? He's not here, but he's here in spirit in the script. How are you?
I'm all right.
Tim Jones, sorry, I should give you a proper introduction there.
Yeah, everyone will know who that is.
Though. Yeah, exactly. And to my right is Gareth Grundy, the deputy editor of Observer Music Monthly. How are you, Gareth?
All right.
Last time I saw you, we were standing in the rain outside during the fire drill.
Yes.
Not very rock and roll.
Exciting
but it's
times.
True. You've brought a single today, and we're going to have a listen to it now. It's The Omen by The Prodigy. The writing's on the wall. Was The Omen by The Prodigy, who are best known for their string of dance hits in the 90s, including Charlie, No Good and Out of Space. Founding members Liam Howlett and Keith Flint met through the early 90s rave scene in England, and Flint's friend Leroy Thornhill became the group's official dancer alongside MC Maxim Reality. The band have released 5 albums since forming nearly 20 years ago, including Music for a Jilted Generation, which debuted at number 1 in the UK charts, and the most recent of which, Invaders Must Die, from which The Omen is taken. Gareth, why have you brought this single into Singles Club?
Because they're kind of good again.
Yeah?
Prodigy are good again.
Okay.
Not, yeah, this album's kind of being billed as a return to form, which it sort of is. It's not good all the way through. It's half great, half not so good. And, yeah, A, they're good again. B, they've become kind of a rave heritage act. Like a kind of Metallica art of metal kids. The Prodigy are to ravers, which is kind of interesting because you wouldn't necessarily expect that from rave, which is so much about being in a particular moment, either in a club with your friends or, let's face it, on drugs somewhere.
Yeah.
You wouldn't associate that with a kind of, you know, historical, archival approach to music, but I guess it's coming to everything now. You know, there's going to be a DJ version of Guitar Hero later this year. It will have some Prodigy tracks on it.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of approach.
Okay, so there is sound. I mean, the Prodigy are one of those bands that just completely passed me by and passed by everybody that I knew. I've got no real reference points for them from my youth, except for maybe the very early 90s when they popped up on like a Now, you know, 29 or whatever it was back then. I just have no, and also, you know, and therefore I think that's because rave just was before my time. I mean, I really would have been too young to have gone. So it doesn't really mean a great deal to me. And I have to say, I don't particularly like this song, but I haven't heard the album. And so I don't know. I mean, you know.
But isn't there a mini sort of rave, not rave revival, but it's sort of come back into play, not in a kind of cheesy klaxons, new rave sort of way, but you've got bands like Pendulum or Justice, are very much kind of in the spirit of making dance music about jumping up and down, having and the music being quite hard and extreme. And there's a zombie producer, you know, produced that album, Where Were You in 92, which is almost a kind of pastiche of a load of Prodigy in that early 90s era rave stuff. It just seems to be kind of something bubbling up, really. But I don't think Zombies is old enough to remember rave first time.
I think the Zombie track's a bit more playful in a way. It's almost quite funny, isn't it? Because it's so like kind of rooted in that old kind of rave culture. This Prodigy track to me is a bit more slightly embarrassing because it could be off Jilted Generation.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny because Metallica, you're talking about heritage acts, and I think guitar bands can kind of get away with being a bit of a heritage act because guitar music hasn't gone to that many interesting places recently. But I think dance music, you still get bands like, you know, Telepathy on this show, making quite interesting sounds, I guess. And I don't know, this just sounds very, very tired to me, just really tired. Like, I think the only interesting thing about it was it did sound like it had a kind of an emo chorus, which they wouldn't have done before. I don't know if anyone else heard that. It was quite, you know, it just sounded like they'd been listening to a bit of emo.
Well, the bad bits of the record are kind of the towards their tendency to make sort of weird electronic metal, which is just, you know, not a great idea. I mean, there was a Keith Flint solo album where he put a band together, but the record never came out.
Oh, really?
And that was kind of mostly pretty, you know, in my view, sort of pretty substandard rock, really.
Wow, all right. Well, that was The Omen by The Prodigy, which is out next week, the single?
This week, I think. And clearly only I like it.
Well, maybe the listeners on the can tell us on the blog what they think of it and what they think of The Prodigy comeback. But in the meantime, we're going to listen to The Walkman with Four Provinces. Polish, mahogany, gin and cigars. Yeah, come on, man. That was The Walkman with Four Provinces. They are an indie five-piece from New York, most famous for their 2004 indie classic, The Rat. The band formed in 2000 and received notable acclaim for their 2002 debut, Everybody Who Pretended to Like Me Is Gone. They made their fifth album, You and Me, from which this is taken, available for $5 and donated all the proceeds to the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Centre in New York, just a little aside that I thought was quite nice. This is my choice. The Walkman are kind of, to me, quite an interesting band. They've never, ever evolved their sound, ever. And it's pretty, to me, pretty distinctive. I think you know exactly what you're hearing when you listen to one of their songs. It's got kind of a raggedness, but also a youthfulness about it, this particular track. He's kind of got, there's something Tom Waits-ish Americana about it, which I think they do quite well. And there's also something about their sound, and I guess maybe in this song it's the kind of clattering pots and pans feel to the percussion, but there's almost like an absence from their sound, which I think is really important, and I've never really been able to put my finger on what it is, that there's something almost willfully understated about them. I think the melody is lovely on this song, and that's about it. I don't think they're the best band in the world. I don't think they're ever going to be, but I think the album from which it's taken is really nice and maybe deserved a little bit more attention than it did. Tim, what did you think?
I think it's all about the vocals with this band, isn't it?
Do you think?
Just sounds so, just like he's been dragged through a hedge. And just sounds, you know, he sounds drunk, he sounds heartbroken, he sounds like he's been messed around. It's just, I think that's what sets them apart, I think, from your average kind of
Indian. Stuart Lupton, we should say.
Stuart Lupton.
Okay, do you like it?
I do like it, but, I mean, yeah, I do.
Do you think it's a bit throwaway?
I went to see The Walkman, sort of, 8 years ago in New York when there were just people started talking about them because it was Jonathan Fire Eater, wasn't it, before that. And I think they're great, but they haven't really changed since then when I first saw them. So it's not.
They never do that big thing maybe since The Rat, which you think, wow, they are a really good band. Mm-hmm. Maybe they had the one amazing song. Gareth, are you a fan?
I always want to like them more than I do.
Okay.
I think The Rat, brilliant.
Yeah.
What have they ever done that's anywhere near as good as that? Nothing really.
Okay.
Some quite good stuff, but it's nothing. And I it's almost like they're afraid to be that good again.
Do you think that's what it is? They are.
In a way, but there's a kind of history of self-destruction in that, because there's an argument for saying when they were Jonathan Fire Eater, or the members of The Walkman that were Jonathan Fire Eater, they basically invented the Strokes. Because obviously The Rat comes out after the Strokes, but they were doing that anyway. And every Jonathan Fire Eater never happened. They got signed for a load of money and there was some personal problems and it all fell apart. But yeah, love the idea of them, but I always end up listening to The Rat going, nah, they're never going to be as good as this ever all again. Right.
Okay, so maybe it's not as good as The Rat, but maybe Four Provinces is pretty good, maybe. It seems to be the general opinion. And something that probably will be a little bit more divisive between us is Tim's choice, and this is Dialed by the Blackout Crew.
Oh, it's doing me head in this. Someone answer it.
Just answer the phone.
Someone turn that phone off.
I tell you what, I'm getting sick of this.
Sit on silent.
I've got feelings of anxiety. Me.
Picking up. Whose is it?
Someone saw it. They're trying to record on that.
Welcome to the Blackout Services. It's a new track, you ain't heard of this. After the peak, leave your messages. Then we'll surely get back to you. Just give me the right space of time to pick up a phone to make the reply. But if you send a text off your chat with a phone saying, what bet, don't ask why. Cause I'm about to lose my patience. I don't want no conversation. With a guy that I ain't ever met is trying to make me tremble with a death threat.
That's Dialed by Blackout Crew. The Bolton Collective Blackout Crew are the originators of donk, a form of music which Guardian columnist John McDonald describes as bouncy techno meets terrible rapping. They shot to fame in certain parts of the world anyway with Put a Donk on It, a donk being literally a sample of a donk-type sound littered all over the music. Other songs of theirs include Raver's Binge, and they're signed to a label called All Around the World. Tim, why have you brought this song in?
It's a very good question. One I'm not quite sure why I've brought it in. You've got to admit, it's pretty fascinating and pretty addictive in some way. It's quite compelling and you do want to listen to it. Mm. It reminds me of, I don't know, kind of the Helter Skelter and Dreamscape tapes I used to buy as a kid. And there'd always be like a couple of sides of kind of really fast, annoying techno that gave you a migraine. And it's like that, but with a kind of knowing comedy element to it. I'm not saying it's great or that I'd ever listen to it for more than 20 seconds. But, you know, the last track they did, which everyone was talking about, what was that called again?
Put a Donk on It.
Put a Donk on It. How can I have forgotten that? Is that what it's called? So
doesn't it kind of prove my rave revival, rave has never really gone away argument? They are in a continuum that, you know, that's on the same continuum as the Prodigy.
Yeah, but Where's the Prodigy to me sounds really quite tired and it's all old men coming back. And
yeah, yeah. This is like any old band back.
Yeah, again. And these guys sound like they're just having the time of their lives. I think that's what I like about it, actually. They just sound like they're having a total laugh and they don't really care that they're going to get loads of stick in the music press or whatever and they're not going to be, you know, the next.
Aren't they like the E17 of Donk, though?
That's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, they're the E17. They're like a boy band for all of that kind of, you know, pop rave that's big in the north of England.
But this is the stuff that these types of bands, no, you can't really call it that, but these types of songs are the ones that are getting signed up by majors like Universal and Island, because it's really the only example left or at the moment where you can guarantee a definite audience that are going to go out and buy it. Like, what was that N-Dub song that sold something like 300,000?
Well, N-Dubs are on the same label, they're on All Around the World. Yeah.
So it's like, but it's all being bought, the distribution's just being bought up by major labels, because it's kind of like, you know, what other big subcultures are there where, you know, you've got tribes of fans that are totally dedicated to it, stuff like this. It's like, what's that grime one, Heads, Shoulders, Knees and Toe, that's been bought up for like reportedly a massive fee by Iron Records. So it's, I don't know, obviously we're missing something. I think it sounds absolutely awful, but you know.
But you know, almost quite like how bad, because they've really put an effort in with this one, to actually build up, you know, the most annoying sound in the modern world is someone's phone going off, and they've managed to build like a symphony out of people's phones going off. It's almost like, you know, almost.
You always take your hat off to them, I think.
Exactly, and why in torture camps around the world, why are they playing Metallica to people when this is on the market?
Yeah, just Donk hasn't reached Basra yet.
Yeah, exactly. But when it does, the war will be over.
Right. Well, I'm sure you've all got lots to say about Blackout Crew on the blog, so do let us know. And you know, if you want to buy Dialed for whatever reason, you can do from iTunes right now.
Can you buy it? Because another thing I should just add is that it's been taken off the MySpace and it's been taken off YouTube.
Is it?
And I've started to wonder if it was all just a dream.
But I listened to it on the MySpace today.
Oh, okay.
It's not illegal use of a Nokia ringtone, is it?
Well, exactly. Sued.
Breach of copyright.
All right. And so, unfortunately, that brings us to the end of Singles Club. But not before we have time to look at how you all felt about our choices last week on the blog. This Is Me Typing My Name had some more to say about Empire of the Sun. He said, They are okay. I don't really see much Fleetwood Mac in them. Of anything lately, they just seem like a rehashed MGMT, what with psychedelic art school stylings. Pains of Being Pure at Heart are, despite their terrible name, much more interesting to me. You mentioned in the podcast a thing I would have referenced, like the Isn't Anything era, My Bloody Valentine and Belle and Sebastian. The fact that they're also from New York worries me. Has British music reached such a horrible cultural dead end that we have to go straight to Williamsburg for decent new music? Or is the New York City scene at the moment something genuinely special? Japantha had this to say about Pains of Being Pure at Heart. On the other hand, he said, after giving Empire of the Sun a bit of a slagging off, Pains of Being Pure at Heart have got it just right. Walking the tightrope of twee, but with enough sincerity and tunes to pull it off. Great stuff. It seems to go down quite well, Tim Jones.
That was yeah, I always bring in the best records.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be a chorus of agreement again this week.
Well, you lot are generally quite hard to please on the blog, so deliver more withering criticism on guardian.co.uk/music/music blog on the likes of Blackout Crew, Prodigy and The Walkman. And also let us know what you thought of these snippets. Baraka Som Sistema featuring MIA, DJ Zenobia and Putu Pato, Sound of Kuduro. Skint and Demoralised, this song is definitely not about you. It's definitely not about you. Hey, sexy boots. Get on your boots, yeah. You too. Get your boots on. Free me from a dark dream, candy floss, ice cream. All the kids are screaming, but the ghosts aren't real. Here's what we gotta be, love and community. Laughter is eternity if joy is real. Yeah, I'm watching the days go by, whoa. Yeah, I'm watching them fall like flies. The soft pack. Nightlife / Bright Side. And it's making me wonder why. Alright, oh yeah. That was your montage, so you know what that means. It's time for Gareth Grundy to go back to the Observer Music Monthly, which comes free with the Observer this Sunday. And now it's time for you to tell us all the fantastic things that people can.
Give you my sales pitch.
To give you the sales pitch.
On the cover, you two.
Yes, okay.
Shauna Hagen, the excellent Shauna Hagen.
He's been spending
18 months with the band.
Okay.
Started off in Fez in Morocco while they were recording the new album, No Line on the Horizon. So he was basically a kind of the fifth member of U2 for a while. And it's a great piece, mainly because he goes a little bit deeper with Bono than most people have gone for the last few years. Particularly my favourite thing is when he asks him whether he ever prayed with George Bush. The same question, obviously, that Paxman asked Blair about George Bush.
Don't tell us what the answer is.
No, but it's a really good answer that will maybe make you think differently about Bono, depending on how you feel. Probably a divisive character for the listeners of the Guardian podcast, I would add. But and the other great thing in there is we have a fantastic world exclusive on the auction of the contents of Michael Jackson's Neverland, which you can bid for online on Sunday.
Wow.
It's not all ridiculously expensive. The glittery socks, I would say, are within most people's price range. The semi-operational robot head may be a little bit more expensive. And the actual scissor hands from Edward Scissorhands, if you maybe club together with your friends, it's a thing worth owning, I'm saying.
Wow. Has he worn the glittery socks?
I almost definitely worn the glittery socks. And there's a glove. Yeah, and the actual auction starts in April. It's absolutely fascinating. Just coffee machines with Neverland logos on, strange golf carts with paintings, and there's a great painting of Michael Jackson with the classic kind of sunglasses, white glove, and then also in the painting is Albert Einstein, sunglasses, white glove, E.T., sunglasses, white glove, Napoleon, sunglasses, white gloves. Brilliant.
Napoleon.
I'm pretty sure it's Napoleon. It's somebody like that, and you know, you don't get that with the Kaiser Chiefs, really, do you?
Right, well, there's all that and more, I'm sure, on the Observer Music Monthly this Sunday. Gareth, thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
As we move seamlessly into the next section of this week's show, I turn again to the blog and Japantha's comments on Telepathy in Singles Club last week. Like most people, I'm sure, I'm beyond bored of posh kids in overpriced dayglow, ironic but not singlets with synthesizers. But I warmed to Telepathy. They seem a bit more multidimensional than the bulk of the post new rave lot, and there's a nice hypnotic quality to their tunes that appeals to the drone fan in me. Well, let's have another listen, shall we? That was So Fine by Telepathy from their debut LP Dance Mother, one which I may add is truly winning critics and fans over left, right and centre. The band is fronted by Busy Ganes and Melissa Laudes and is based in Brooklyn, where the duo take their cues from hip-hop, drone and pop to create a sound they hope is pretty unique. Well, I grabbed a chat with Melissa while she was taking an afternoon stroll down Fifth Avenue earlier this week, and I started by asking her why it's taken them 4 whole years as a band to make their debut album.
We grew up kind of like playing. Busy studied piano from a young age, and I studied a little piano. And then we decided that we wanted to like be in control of the full composition, you know? I mean, all we had were like some guitar pedals, a guitar, and drums. And so what we did was build like a home studio and start using like music software. We kept writing stuff, like we did it every day and every day and every day and grew and learned more and more and more to the point where, I mean, we decided that we wanted to be producers, you know, and we want to learn from producers.
I know that you guys, that dancing features pretty highly for you guys, but I think I know what that reference in the title is, but why is the mother in Dance Mother a significant part of the album's title? Where did that come from?
We performed on a Halloween a couple of years ago, and it was like the day before we went into the studio with Dave Siddick, and we kind of just like threw together these crazy like zombie costumes that said Dance Motherfucker. We're like, oh man, this should just be the title. And then we were like, well, we don't want to come off being like aggressive, you know, we're like Dance Mother, it's just like, I don't know, it sounds so elegant in this way.
Every day, dearest Orkin, find a way. Behind the eyes of your sister's portrait, wine, vine, and pray on the minds. Two dearest things, one man with a gun and one with an arm. It is a basic sensation. It was a basic sensation. It is a basic sensation. A phantasmata of her mother. Don't avoid a straightforward answer. Take the cold one with the cold arms.
Like that's kind of how I see how your music ends up sounding, because you've got these beautiful melodies buried in there, but the lyrics on this album are kind of macabre. Is that intentional?
Yeah. The lyrics are the last thing we write, and we edit them, you know. We kind of like write them together, we'll like share and then like fill, like take words out and put words that we like in. But I mean, I think we like the macabre, you know. I think it's like it just felt right for this record. Well, also we like contrast, I should add that. So, like, if we felt like a melody was, like, too pretty and happy, like, you know, we kind of wanted to, like, muddy it.
And you mentioned Dave there, and that would be Dave Siddick from TV on the Radio. He's got a bit of a reputation as a sort of mad professor of music, particularly when it comes to synergizing sounds. What was your experience of working with him? And how did you come to be working with him?
We had a mutual friend. There was no intention of, like, you know, her being like, hey, would you work with this band or whatever. She just, like, played our music, and he really liked it, and we met him, or I met him in person from her, and we were talking about music, and he's like, if you ever want to do some recording, you know, I have a studio. And I was like, yeah, I'd like that. And then he's like, okay, how about the entire month of November?
Yeah. In a review of your album, it said that the great thing about you is that you don't have to choose between Lil Wayne and Animal Collective, Madonna and My Bloody Valentine, because you can have all that at once with telepathy. Are those the kind of reference points that you think, yeah, okay, that's it, that kind of gets us?
We never wanted to be confined to one thing or, like, live in the shadows of, like, experimental music. We wanted to take, like, all of these elements from, like, pop music or whatever and create our own version of it. There were scenes like hardcore kids and punk kids and, like, everything was separate, but now I just feel like right now is, like, things are just, like, kind of, like, melting together and there's no one definitive thing, you know? And we want to put everything we love into our music.
Do you feel like New York is a particularly good place to be in a band right now?
There's a lot of exciting outlets for live music and being a band, you know? It is a bit oversaturated, and there's so much music and so many bands moving here that I think a lot of bands are really kind of carving out their own, like, you know, independent sound or whatever. Like, I think that's, like, the people that can really make it happen.
That was Melissa from Telepathy, live from Fifth Avenue, and their debut album, Dance Mother, is out right now on V2. Right, we're going to head back to the blog now for a little bit of comment on last week's interviewee, Darren Emerson. Madrid Mike is back, and he said, it is strange to see Darren Emerson complain about electropop music and all those crappy MTV videos of girls with their boobs out, when he was the one who threw his lot in with Eric Murillo to run the Subliminal Sessions Underwater Night in Ibiza, damaging any credibility he had. Murillo's Handbag House sound epitomises the very music Emerson complains of. Very astute criticism there, Madrid Mike. Speaking of sexism, sort of, SV80 took me up on the continuing Lady Gaga saga. It's feasible, he says, that Lady Gaga is simply dressing provocatively to get press attention, although she claims to be the first pop star in history to have been told by her label to wear more clothes. But you have to remember that she made her name on the New York Club Underground cabaret circuit. Check Gorka's Blue States Loose archives and you'll see dozens of people who dress just like her or considerably worse. Fair enough, I hold my hands up to you. We'll agree to disagree on this one, SV. Meanwhile, we head over to the feature with no name, or as Mundaji calls it on the blog last week, the last 6 minutes of the podcast or so, which I quite like. Paul Lester, who was our guest last week, is here to talk about Los Angeles psych rock outfit Spirit in the feature with no name.
Spirit were a great band, or rather, great bands. They did jazz, jazz rock, pop, hard rock, psychedelia. They captured everything that was great about late 60s music. They just didn't have the success enjoyed by those other classic psych-era West Coast bands like the Grateful Dead and the Jefferson Airplane, despite the fact that they had a top 30 US hit in 1968 with I Got a Line on You, and that one of their songs, Taurus, was cited by no less an authority than Jimmy Page, a huge Spirit fan, as an influence on Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven after the two bands toured together. Despite the fact that their lead singer, Randy California, was also a guitar prodigy who once played with Jimi Hendrix. It was Hendrix who gave the young Jewish axeman, born Randy Craig Wolf in 1951, his unusual surname. There are two Spirit phases well worth investigating. The four albums they made for Columbia Records between 1968 and 1970, and the four they made during their so-called comeback in the mid-70s for the Mercury label. Their fourth Columbia album, The 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus, featuring their theme song, Nature's Way, is widely considered to be the best of their early work, and many have acclaimed it a masterpiece of psychedelic, jazz-tinged space rock. Their four comeback albums were something else. After reputedly attempting suicide by jumping into the River Thames in the early 70s and releasing a heavy, depressed album of acid rock and blues called Captain Copter and the Fabulous Twirly Birds, California reformed Spirit with his famously bald stepdad, Ed Cassidy, as ever on drums. You're just a victim of society. California and Cassidy who formed the core of the revamped Spirit on their four mid to late 70s releases. Double album Spirit of 76, Son of Spirit, Farther Along, which outdid Steely Dan for slick sophisticated pop, and Future Games, the latter an appropriately forward-looking affair featuring sampled voices from Star Trek and all manner of sound bursts and weird effects. I just came here to remind you that the stars are the stars. All four albums were quite literally cosmic, but they sold in pitifully small numbers, appealing to a fanatical few. And that's how Spirit remain, the ultimate cult rockers. Randy California died in 1997, drowning off the coast of Hawaii as he saved his 12-year-old son from a rip current. He was 45. You could say it was nature's way, but really, the best way to remember him, for real proof of Spirit's greatness and of California's genius as a musician, songwriter and rock visionary, try any of their Mercury releases, four of the greatest albums of the 70s. I could order you to have a medical
examination. That was Paul Lester waxing lyrical about the virtues of experimental Californian rock with Spirit, whose music you can find from any reputable source around right now. There's just enough minutes left to say hi to new Facebook friends Alexandra Ivanova, Gabriella Cox, Dan Trevor, Daniel Tort and Jonathan Isaac. If you want to join us as friends on Facebook, just type Guardian Unlimited Music into the search box and we'll definitely accept and we promise not to poke you. Thanks so much to this week's guests, Tim Jones and Gareth Grundy, and thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Bye.